Welcome back to Roaming with Restless Women. I have today Dr. Laura Sekola. She is a leadership, communication, and influence expert, speaker, author of Speaking to Influence, Mastering Your Leadership Voice, and host of the global top 1% podcast, Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite. She also had the podcast Alpha Whisperers Genesis. Her mission is to transform executives into confidence-inspiring leaders. A cognitive linguist by background, she has trained and coached executives at Fortune 500 companies and nonprofit leaders from around the world. I listened to her TEDx podcast or TEDx talk, sorry. Want to sound like a leader? Start by saying your name right. And she has nearly 7 million views on that one. So we are going to spend some time today talking about how to have more executive presence vocally and how to go overcome some of those oh crap moments when you lose your train of thought, or as we get older, we lose our words. So welcome, Laura Sekolas. Laura, it is so nice to meet you, and thank you. Welcome for being here.
Thank you so much for the invitation, Julie. I can't wait to jump into the conversation with you.
So how did you become a linguist to begin with? What was the thing that drew you to being a linguist?
I think I've always had a fascination with foreign languages and cultures. My one non-Italian grandmother is from Chile. And from the time I can remember, she would come to visit us around Christmas for something. And I remember as a little kid hearing her on the phone with her siblings back in Santiago and speaking in what I thought was this, magic code, this kind of superpower of Babel that would come out, and I couldn't understand it. Of course, the world knows it is Spanish. I did not at the time, but that became, I think, the first goal that I ever set for myself was someday I'm going to understand grandma's secret code and be able to talk in grandma's secret code. And so, it became an obsession to learn Spanish and then to learn other languages, and it just started from there.
So, how many languages do you have currently?
Well, it depends on what level of proficiency and slash how well can I get myself in trouble in different languages, but Spanish was my second language, Japanese was my third, Italian is my fourth. I'm working on that, and I've dabbled in probably close to a dozen others to various degrees of uselessness, but nevertheless fun.
It is fun. It is a lot of fun to learn new things, especially the older we get, the more entertained and curious we can become.
Yes. And
And
it's never too late to learn a foreign language. So I don't want to
yeah.
hear any of those excuses.
Exactly right. You can learn it to some degree at least. Maybe you
Right.
won't be proficient or fluent, but it doesn't matter. You
No, I
can
mean,
have a
what's the goal? The
conversation.
goal is not to ever get to 100%. There's no such thing. I'm not at 100% in English yet. So
Yeah,
it's just a matter of,
exactly.
what do you want to be able to do with it? Do you want to travel and be able to haggle or order for yourself in a restaurant? Good. Set that as the goal and check, you're done.
Exactly. And based on my husband and his life, where's the bathroom?
Yes.
He's always looking for the bathroom.
I'll be right behind him on
Oh,
that line.
yeah. So tell me a little bit about why, what is your passion around this? Because you have written books, you have done the podcasts, you've done the TED Talk. What is it that you just find so incredibly fascinating about executive presence and using your voice?
I think it's a couple of things. One, it, of course, is that I truly believe on the broadest level that 98% of all the conflict in the world, barring the massive, global
Yeah.
stuff, we'll just the I'm going to let your eye roll speak for itself, and we're going to go from there. Aside from those kinds
Yes.
of issues, all interpersonal challenges are usually because there's two people looking at each other and saying, but you don't understand, you're not listening to me. And when people don't feel heard and understood, they are unable to then hear and understand. And it's like a game of chicken. in conversation? Who's going to flinch first? So how do we get ourselves into that space where two people of whatever walks of life, personal, professional, or otherwise, can genuinely communicate in a way that allows themselves and the other person to both hear and understand and feel heard and feel understood? If we can get to that point, anything else is possible. So that's my true underlying motivation to everything. Where that falls within the executive presence space is that, in our business professional lives, we have jobs to do. We have objectives to achieve, goals to reach. And, you get up to a certain level on the career ladder based on your technical skill, whether you're in finance or IT or, whatever it happens to be. But then you hit what I call a linguistic glass ceiling. And it's no longer about how well you execute technical tasks. Now, suddenly, there's this lateral shift that has to be made. And if you want to continue to move up to that next level, into that executive rank, now it's about how you lead people. How do you empower people? How do you connect with people? How do you get that listening and understanding back and forth? And if you can do that, then you're viewed as ready to lead. But most people, especially in the technical spaces, that's not a skill set that was we'll call it a priority to develop up until that point. So suddenly you're going, well, why didn't anybody tell me this until now? Suddenly I'm expected to have this skill set that was not something that I really needed before this. And we want people to not be held back by that. So we want to get that executive presence, the ability to be heard and understood, the ability to hear and understand at the same level as those technical skills. And that's when where the real power lies.
100% agree. Having come up through the ranks myself, it took me quite a while to get to the point where I understood that it wasn't just the words that I was saying and my technical skill. It was how I was saying it, how I was hearing other people and reinterpreting that back to them to indicate, hey, I'm listening to you. I get what you're saying. And let me share my perspective and let's come to the middle and figure out how to go forward. It took a while for me to do that because when I was growing up in corporate America, we were in competition with everyone. That was the main modus operandi at that point in time, particularly for women. What the kind of tips and tricks do you share with new and upcoming executives or wannabe executives to get them over that hump?
So let me qualify a little bit there. I tend to not use the phrase tips and tricks because you wouldn't go to a swimming coach or a golf coach, but many of us have taken golf lessons, and say, could you just give me some tips and tricks to No, that's not how it works, right? These are real skills for real advancement. So, but to I'll stick with the golf analogy for the moment. What we can do is the 2 millimeter shift. Right. So for anyone out there who's not a golfer, and I'm not, but I've swung a club. Not, what I do would never be called playing golf. I'm definitely not at that point yet. But when you're holding the club, just a slight 2 millimeter shift rotation of your wrists when you hit that ball, the ball can land 50 yards off in a different direction from where it would have landed from that original angle. So what we're going to do is a 2 millimeter mindset shift today that can change your perspective on how you approach. And then over time and trajectory, you'll land much further along the trajectory that you want in your career and have that success. So, does that work for you? Is that okay to reset
Oh,
that
I
way?
would love that. Love that. Yes.
So, I think the everything that I coach, everything that I train, like you in the executive coaching space, with the focus on influence and communication, is about mastering the three C's. And it's the ability, the three C's are the ability to command the room, connect with the audience, and close the deal. And if we break that down real quick, the number one, to command the room, there's a difference between commanding respect and demanding it, between
Yes.
commanding attention and demanding attention. If you have to demand either, you will never command it. the ability to command the room is just when you walk in, and the room or the screen for that matter. So you can click join meeting or walk through the door. It doesn't matter. It's the same idea. But when you walk in, when you sit down, when you begin, before you even open your mouth, does something about your presence compel people naturally to look, to listen, to pay attention, to be curious, to be ready? Number two, the connecting with the audience. As you start to talk, no matter who the other person is, no matter what your topic is, no matter how different your worlds are, you find that at least one point where on that level, you're both thinking, okay, on this point, you understand me and I understand you. And we're going to find that connection and move forward together. And number three, closing the deal. It doesn't have to be literally in the sales world of signing on the dotted line and committing a financial exchange for services of some sort. It just means think you can think about it in, it could certainly be that, but it could be about moving the needle forward, about getting to yes, about just getting an answer that you've been seeking, about coming to a mutual agreement at some point. And that agreement might just be, you know what? I think everybody's tired, maybe a little hangry. Why don't we just take a break for lunch? Let's go grab a bite, go for a walk, and we'll come back with, fuller bellies and clearer minds and air conditioning, and we'll start over again. And okay, that's another closing the deal. We've said we've agreed. Yes, let's try again. We want to continue with a better energy for better productivity moving forward. So command the room, connect with the audience, and close the deal. I think that's a really important framing.
And those that framing, is that present in your books?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Right up front. We start
All
with that
right.
because that's the big picture
Yeah.
framework that we want. And then everything else in there is about how to do that.
Yeah. That's beautiful. It's almost a blend of marketing and I don't know, psychology
Yes.
together, which is
Sure.
wonderful because I think most of us don't realize when we're young in our careers that we're constantly marketing. We're constantly making sure that our presence is something that matches with the need or the want of the other person.
Yes.
And that doesn't mean changing it. One thing that I had a problem with when I was younger, because I had a big ego, still do, but
Don't
no
think you're
doubt,
alone.
well, no lack of confidence right here. I get to, but
Good.
when I was younger in my career, it was, don't tell me that I have to adjust or realign myself. I wanted to be, and I was very proud of being my own self, and I wanted to bring my real self and be authentic. So, have you run into this before, and how do you help people understand why that it's important to be able to align with another person in that way?
I'm so glad you asked this because this is such a hot button topic for me and I think for everybody. Authenticity. Yes,
Yes.
utterly essential. Asterisk. Because authenticity is not a black and white term. And we look at it like it's a black and white term, like it's a power switch. This is me. That's not me. Now I'm on. Now I'm off. This is
Right.
my box. This is your box. And these two boxes don't intersect. And we don't want anybody else to put us in a box, but we put ourselves in a box as soon as we say, I'm not doing it. That's not me. I got to be me. So what I like to refer to as the authenticity myth is the notion that authenticity just means unfiltered, my preference, my comfort zone, what I want because I want it. That's not authentic. That's just narrow-minded and self-limiting. So if we look at it on a couple of, let me back out for a second. I like to use the analogy of what I call the prismatic voice that we all have. Now, I don't know if you've got children or if you've got, so how old are your kids? Let me rephrase that. How many kids do you have?
I have two and they're both grown, and I
They're
have a
grown. Okay.
grandson.
Oh, grandson. Okay.
Oh,
How old's your grandson?
he's only 6 months.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Great. So we're going to borrow your grandson as an example
Oh,
here.
please, yes.
Now, Ms. Noonan, Coach Noonan, when you talk to your 6-month-old grandson, do you talk to him like you're talking to me right now?
No, but my daughter would prefer that I do.
Okay.
That's a new thing. I don't know if you've run across this, but it's a new thing. These new parents have new rules.
I'm not judging any parents. Every parent's got their
I'm
own
telling you,
rules, their own ways.
no baby talk.
Okay. Well, but it comes out naturally, doesn't it?
It does. But I still don't speak to him as I would speak to a client, or to my sister, for instance.
Right. So even if you curb the actual cooing and baby talk, you still wouldn't talk to him like you're coaching a client,
No.
right? So with that in mind, going back to people's kind of mental systems, which one is the real you and which one's the fake you? Which one is
Yeah.
authentic?
Well, when I talk
Both
to
are
him,
on.
probably more.
Right. And
More of
that's the
me.
thing. So this is perfect example. It's not that the baby talk, grandma, I want to eat you up kind of person is real or fake. And then if that one's real, then the other one must be fake, that only one of those colors is authentic and the other is inauthentic. They're just different sides of you, and they come out naturally at different times because of who you're talking to, what the context is, the nature of the relationship you want to have with them. It's fully natural to shift gears. It falls
Yes.
under a concept as referred to as code switching, which there are certain unhealthy contexts when somebody feels like they have to cover, feels like they have to pretend to be someone they're not, whether it's due to gender, racial, or orientation, other things. So we're not going to go into that extreme on the spectrum. But generally speaking, we talked earlier, I speak Spanish, I speak Japanese. That's code switching on a very macro level, shifting from coaching talk to baby talk. That's on a more of a micro level of switching. So I mentioned before, I like the analogy of the prismatic voice, which means, have you ever had one of those little crystals that's hanging maybe from the kitchen window or the rearview
Yes.
mirror in your car, and the sunlight hits it and the rainbow kind of comes out the other side? In that same way, we are that white sunlight that goes through the prism of the context, the room, the environment, et cetera. And inside our white light are all those colors of that spectrum, just like in the sunshine. So maybe we'll call the grandma language, that speaking style, your blue. And we'll call your coaching language your orange. And we'll call your, I'm hanging out with my girlfriends having brunch and mimosas on Sunday afternoons. We'll call that your green. And they're all part of you. You just know that in this context, the same way you would dress differently, it's all from your wardrobe, all from your closet. But you know, this environment, I wear the sundress. This environment, I wear the blazer. This environment, I wear the sloppy sweats. Your version of them, but you know how to dress for the occasion. You also know how to dress your voice, dress your words, dress your messaging for the context. And so you identify what color from your spectrum would be most appropriate to help that audience hear what you need them to hear in a way that they can hear it, but in a way that's still authentically you. That's the magic combination. And that 2 millimeter shift, you have a spectrum, you have a whole array of colors in your speaking style available to you that are all authentic. It's just a matter, it's not just a giant power switch, but pick the right color for the moment.
That's beautiful. I think one of the things too that I hear people say is I don't want to have to change for anyone else. Okay. It's a matter of I'm not changing, I'm just repositioning, like you said. I'm still here. I'm still me. As a matter of fact, I can only be me. And that's something that a lot of folks need to understand when they're young in their careers, is that there's no one picture of you that is, quote unquote, totally authentic. You will continue to learn who you are the whole rest of your life. There, it's, I think sometimes, particularly in the leadership development space, we try to make these concepts so incredibly black and white that they no longer serve anyone.
I agree.
And so I so much appreciate your prismatic view because that is exactly right. And like you said, all of it is you. It's from your closet.
Yes.
Beautiful.
Yes.
Thank you
Yes.
so much for that. There's some
Oh, I'm so
wisdom
glad.
for us. I love that, ladies, when we get that beautiful, bright spot of wisdom. Okay, so tell me a little bit about you personally. How did you decide to become, a doctor, to go to school and get that big degree? And tell me what's next for you.
It's such a ironic story because I remember when I was graduating with my bachelor's degree and at the ceremony watching doctoral candidates go up with their long flowy robes and their funny beanie
And the
hats, the tams
velvet.
and all that kind of stuff. And I remember thinking to myself, you guys are nuts. There's no way on God's green earth I'm going back to school again. I was so sick of school. I was tired of homework and the nonsense. I just wanted to get a job. I wanted a paycheck. I wanted to have a quote unquote real life and just go in that direction. I thought, no way. And then I shifted, I had a job after college that I didn't like, and one thing led to another, and I ended up in the education world. And so I was a public school teacher for a while, which means, of course, I had to go back and get a my bachelor's was international relations and Japanese. And then, but to be a public school teacher, okay, had to go back, get my certifications. And I ended up doing a master's degree in multicultural education as well while I was there. So got all of that. But then I started doing some leading some teacher training programs. And I realized I liked that. The ability, if I wanted to make a difference to children, I could either work with 30 kids in my class, or I could work with 30 teachers who each have 30 kids in their class. And that was a little bit of a different scope, a different scale of impact. And I liked the challenge of that. So I thought, and then I realized to myself, oh my God, I can't believe I'm saying this, but if I want to do this full time, that means I got to be at a, I got to teach at a university, which means I got to go back to school. And if I got to be a professor, I need a doctorate. So I decided, much against my, my own disbelief, I went back for yet another degree. And had I known then what I know now about how that world works, would I have done it again at the time? I don't know if I would have made the same decision then. I'm certainly glad that I did it. I taught for a good 10 years, loved being part of the university world, but life has a way of showing you detours that are not on the marked path. And that's sort of where I fell into the corporate training, executive coaching space. I didn't know what it was. My older son is, he's just finished college himself. And I remember a few years ago when he was applying to colleges and thinking about what major he would want to study, he said, did you always know that this is what you wanted to do? And I looked him square in the face and said, sweetheart, I didn't know what I do now was a thing until somebody offered to pay me to do it. I'd never heard of executive coaching. It wasn't my space. But there came an opportunity to do some corporate training and to do some consulting work. And I thought, well, this is kind of fun and my skills are transferable. And that's the biggest thing. It's this transferable
Oh,
skills and
yes.
figure, there's a learning curve. There was a steep learning curve in many ways to make that shift. But loved it. Loved it. And I tell students, I get asked a lot, what do you think are important? What's a good major? What would you advise for students in college? So I don't really care what you study. You need transferable skills. And that means you have to know, you have to be able to think for yourself. You have to be able to communicate orally and in writing. And that means listening and speaking and writing and reading and writing. But the communications piece is necessary. And
Yes.
you need to be able to work with people that you don't necessarily like.
100%.
This is everything else you can learn on the job.
What do you think, going back to working with people that you don't necessarily like, one of the things that I've observed in looking at the different generations, I'm a generational kind of aficionado.
Okay.
I love to compare. What I have discovered, or what I think I've discovered, is in 2020, COVID was probably the best thing that ever happened to corporate America, frankly,
Okay.
because it forced a lot of forward thinking. It forced a lot of things to happen faster that were already happening. But one of those things was the need for collaboration and virtual collaboration. The Gen Z workforce was bringing in the whole idea of collaboration being more important, diversity, inclusion, equity, all of that was coming in through that generation. Those of us in the boomer slash Xer, early Xer generations, were struggling with that because a lot of times we see that as lack of leadership. Nobody can make a decision quickly. We need to move this along, et cetera, et cetera. So there was that dynamic going on that I was observing in my consulting practice. What have you noticed between the generations as far as communications goes and the norms that have been established with the Generation Z coming into the workforce?
I think a lot of it has to do with the mode of communication, number one, where the younger new entrants into the workforce would much prefer to communicate with two thumbs on everything. Everything's by text, everything is by abbreviation, everything is short and sweet or not so sweet depending on your perspective. Other generations would prefer at least a phone call or a longer email where there's a little more traceability at that point, of course, but also you can explain things out a bit more. Or do it either on video. Older generations generally don't prefer the video, but they want it in email. If it's not face to face, if you're in the office, the opportunity to do the face to face conversation. But I think a challenge with the with Gen Z is because they went to school through so much COVID, and then have started out where everything is virtual. There's a lack of opportunity to practice more in-depth communication. So much gets lost when you're writing in abbreviations and 10 to 15 word texts, if that much, 3 to 5 words for some of them. There's so much that's lost in the translation, and you don't understand where it is. You don't have a relationship with the person to be able to understand these kinds of things. There's no connection. And while some people see it as more efficient, there's a great expression, if you don't have time to do it right, when will you have time to do it over? So when you have communicated these little piecemeal fragments of something, is it really more efficient to spend several days or several hours in piecemeal messages going back and forth asynchronously, as opposed to just get on the phone or walk across the hall or do something to, get on a Teams call for 3 to 5 minutes just to hash it out, get clear, make sure you're both understanding the same thing, and then move on with it. So, and I think for those also who are more introverted, the opportunity to kind of hide in the virtual space and not have to connect with people. I get that that's a comfort, that's a preference. You may feel like that's an authenticity. But here's the rub, Julie, that like that linguistic glass ceiling that I referenced earlier, you're going to want, everyone eventually is going to want promotions and raises and all those good things that come along with it. But the opportunity to lead, whether it's to lead a project, to lead a team, to lead a division, to lead whatever it happens to be, if a lot of times I'll hear people say, well, I shouldn't have to have all these conversations, build relationships, do, all this people touchy-feely stuff, right? My work should speak for itself. I'm the best at this. I do excellent quality work at that. Yes, but if your work does speak for itself, it doesn't speak for you. So if all anyone knows is that you submit high quality work, what you are communicating to them is that you belong exactly where you are, continuing to submit high quality work, not leading others through it, because that's a different skill set. And people don't promote people to leadership if they don't know who they are as people. They don't know how people will respond to you as their leader. They know how they'll respond to you as someone who's responsible for contributing pieces of the puzzle, but that's different. And you talked earlier about really we're doing sort of marketing and all of those things for ourselves early. For me, it's a branding issue. From the day you set foot in a new company, metaphorically or physically, you are building a brand from a blank slate. So, and the best definition that I think I ever heard of for branding is that a brand is the promise of an experience and the experience of a promise delivered. So,
That's beautiful,
what is your reputation? What brand have you conditioned your coworkers to expect? What experience? What is the experience of working with you and that you continue to reinforce through what you deliver? So if they don't know anything about you except that you submit things that are correct, okay, that doesn't tell me that you have any leadership skills. So why would I risk giving you other people that you are responsible for when I'm unaware of you even wanting to talk to people? Why would you want to lead them if you don't want to look at them? You don't want them to look at you. That's something a little inconsistent in that brand. So people need to think earlier in their careers about the brand that they want to build and the brand that will be required to be trusted enough with leadership opportunities. So, I mean, that is generational fluid, so to speak, but I think it's more of a concern in the younger, earlier careers because they're 10 years, 15 years, 20 years from now, they're going to want that opportunity and they're not going to understand why they're not seen as ready for it. They need to start planting those seeds now, or don't. And then 20 years from now, your boss will call me and to come in and coach you, and that works too. But
Job security.
yes.
All right, well, we're coming close to the end of our time. I wanted to give you an opportunity to share, your final words of wisdom or anything that you want for people to understand about you, the offerings that you have, and how they can get hold of you. And then we'll go into my final three questions.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. You can, if you're interested in executive coaching to focus on leadership communication and influence specifically, you can check out my website, which is simply laurasokola.com, also for trainings or speaking engagements, et cetera. Anybody's welcome to connect with me on LinkedIn, although I will make the request that if anyone out there does reach out on LinkedIn and I invite everyone to do so. Let me know that you heard our conversation, my conversation with Julie on the Roaming with Restless Women podcast. I definitely want to know where the connection is coming from. And we can, of course, bring Julie in on that as well. Would love to share that with her. And what I would love to offer, of course, if I can offer a gift to your guests,
Of
Julie.
course, lovely.
You mentioned my book earlier, which is Speaking to Influence, Mastering Your Leadership Voice. And I would love to offer the first two chapters for free to anybody who wants it. And so we can perhaps put a little link in the show notes for anybody who might want to go and click it. I won't bother giving a URL because I think your people are driving or running or, folding laundry or something while walking the dog while they're listening. So we'll put that link in the show notes and I would love to offer that as a gift.
That's amazing. Thank you so much. They're going to really enjoy that. I know I'm going to go and grab it. That's for
Well, thank
sure.
you.
Okay. So, my first question to end the interview with you is if you could close your eyes real quick. All right. Describe for me what appears in your mind when I say wise woman.
My grandmother.
Okay. What made your grandmother wise?
She was not highly educated, but she had a love of people and she had an understanding of how to make people feel loved and feel understood. And I think more everyone could use a little bit more of that.
Thank you so much. I agree. All right, second question. Where do you like to? Oh, you can open your eyes for
I can open my
these.
eyes. Okay, good.
Sorry. Where do you like to roam?
Oh, any day on the beach is better than a day not on the beach.
Great. I kind of agree with that, though I'm an hour from the beach, so I have to plan that little trip, but I love it.
You and
Okay.
me both.
Finally, what makes you restless in a good way?
Restless in a good way is Both personal and professional, I love family gatherings. So it's the opportunity to host for holidays, for birthdays, for reunions, anything along those lines. I love planning those kinds of events. And professionally, I love meeting new prospective clients and getting to know what they're really looking for, what's been the motivation that's got from them from the curiosity to a little bit of frustration to, okay, I'm officially pulling the trigger now. Tell me about that journey and just learning to understand how I can help. That's always an exciting new door.
I love those too. That's one of my favorite things too, is to speak with new potential clients because the discovery process is so interesting.
Yes.
Well, Laura, thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate your time. I will put all of the information that Laura has provided in the show notes so that you can get a hold of her for her services and to grab those two free chapters of her book. Thank you again, Laura, and we'll talk to you guys later.
Thank you, Julie.